Back together again, Thursday style, you and I chatting it up on October 2nd, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today, where I welcomed Monroe Easton Trumbull GOP State Rep Tony Scott to the show. We talked about the status of a rumored affordable housing bill for a possible upcoming special session at the General Assembly. I also had some previous thoughts on a cryptic social media post about such a bill from a high-ranking state lawmaker. Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar-in-residence Dr. Gary Rose dropped by. We talked about new polling recently regarding the 2026 governor's race. And finally, National Taxpayers Union VP of Research Damian Brady discussed the fiscal consequences and causes of the current partial government shutdown in D.C.
All right, is there a housing bill? Is there not a housing bill? Is there sort of a housing bill? Is there going to be a housing bill in this special session or maybe not? Nobody seems to know. We had some cryptic social media stuff. Everybody's sharing it. Maybe it's a troll. I have no idea. Let's go to somebody who might know, might not know. It depends what the majority is saying in Hartford or willing to say. Republican State Rep Tony Scott joins us. He represents parts of Monroe, Easton, Trumbull, District 112, also the ranking member. And this is why it's important that we talk to Tony. He is the ranking member on the General Assembly's Housing Committee. Hey, Tony, it's Paul here on WYCC. How are you? Thanks for dropping by.
Great, Paul. I'm doing well, and thanks for having me on.
Well, Tony, this seems to be kabuki theater here. I mean, what are we doing? Is there a bill? Is there a framework of a bill? Is it being done out in the open? A lot of people, Tony, on social media, my callers here, just want to know what's happening. Do we have any idea here?
Well, if you know anything about Hartford and a legislative process, the one thing we all know and guarantee is nothing ever is dead. Right. Nothing is ever, no idea is ever dead.
Yeah.
I think what you're seeing here is a last grasp by legislative Democrat leaders to try to get a bill that is very similar to H5002, mm-hmm. try to get over the finish line. But they're doing it in a silo. And that's what they're clearly doing, because I know for a fact I have not heard anything from them in over a month. And so I have no clue that bill that Majority Leader Rojas had a little cryptic tweet out today on.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen that. I have not any feedback or any questions asked about that bill that was in front of them. From my understanding, we met, when I say we, Representative Zullo, who's the ranking member on the Planning Development Committee, which also has a lot of stuff in that bill.
Yeah.
We met with the governor 2 weeks ago, and the governor had proposed a bunch of stuff to legislative leaders, Democrats,
mm-hmm.
and he hasn't heard anything back from them. So it seems like they're just truly working in a silo on what they want to do, maybe with their activists and appease their activists. But that's what's happening. And it's sad, but we don't really know because we're not being told anything.
Tony, forgive me. I just sit here and blab on the radio. It's what I guess I was put on the earth to do here. I'm nowhere as smart as you people are to actually write and make laws. But it seems to me, Tony, that when the majority and the governor aren't really, from what you've told me and from what other people have told me, really in sync on this or have a common line as to, oh, yeah, we're working on it, we've got a framework, we're halfway through it, we're three-quarters through it. When we don't hear anything like that, Tony, is it any wonder that people are kind of sitting back with their eyebrows raised going, hey, what exactly is going on here?
No, it's political theater. I mean, it is municipal election time, so we are in that political theater time. And I think this is something that is just being dangled out there. We are supposed to have special sessions sometime this month. We're in October. We've been told sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we should be going in and having a special session. And we don't have anything to review. We have nothing to even read. Let alone be made public to everyone to see what's out there. Because remember, in this time period, if we have a special session, you do not have to have a public hearing. All those rules that we have during session time go out the window. They can craft any bill they want, stick anything in there. It does not need a public hearing, doesn't need anything, and it could be out there. So who knows what's in that guide, that book, those pages that are sitting in front of Representative Rojas right now, because it could be anything.
State Rep Tony Scott, Republican from District 112, the guest for a couple more minutes, Monroe, Easton, and Trumbull. And Tony, if we put ourselves in the shoes of
of Governor Ned Lamont, a fairly popular governor, obviously, with the latest poll numbers. He's got to be saying to his party, and again, we're not here to put words in the governor's mouth, but he's got to be saying, hey, wait a minute here. I vetoed the first bill because he got blowback from a lot of Republican-led towns and some Democratic-led towns. So I wonder, Tony, I'm just wondering out loud here, what makes the majority think that heading into an election where he's probably going to run again, Tony, why would he sign a bill the second time and not veto it if he thinks it's a bad bill? There's a disconnect here I don't quite understand.
Yeah, it's the definition of insanity of trying to do something over and over again and not change the results, right? And I think that's where we're sitting at. You have a municipal election in a lot of towns. As you mentioned, I'm Monroe, Easton, and Trumbull. Easton and Trumbull, both Democratic-led towns.
Mm-hmm.
Fairfield, Democratic-led towns. I mean, these are very solid blue towns right now. All three of those municipal leaders said, no, they don't want this. So this is not a Republican thing anymore. This is a Republican-Democratic thing. It's bipartisan, and it's up and down the state. This is not, and I like people say that it's all about Fairfield County, but it's not. It's up and down the state. And that's why the governor did what he did, because he heard so many, not just Republicans, but also Democrats who lead towns, lead municipal areas across the state, said, don't do this. There's no way in the world the governor can go back on this now without massive changes to this bill. And from what I've heard right out of the mouth of Majority Leader Rojas, is that what they want to present back is something very similar to what was 5002. And I can't imagine the governor swallowing the pill, putting his tail between his legs and say, okay, I'll pass it this time, with basically putting lipstick on a pig and making minor changes to 5002.
I don't understand, Tony, finally, why the majority wouldn't wait, knowing they're going into an election year next year. And look, barring a major earthquake in Connecticut politics, they would likely be the majority in both chambers again. Tony, I just don't get the rush here. Yes, it's an important topic, but I don't quite understand what the game is here when they have an incumbent governor and they're going to control both chambers unless something happens. Could it be, Tony, and I'm just kind of freestyling here, could it be that they're worried that they need this bill to get the far left of their party to turn out next year? I don't know. I have no idea.
I believe the activists have a lot of power right now, the unions and the activists, because in that 5002, there was a big union piece in there that really got overlooked. It's where they're able to use pension dollars, the unions, to allow them to purchase properties and do affordable housing, and the state would pony up 50% of that, basically getting a 50% off coupon on any property they bought, but yet the pensions of the unions would own 100% of that property. So it's a big win for the unions. It's a big win for activists to do some of these massive changes they're asking for. And I agree, next year is going to be a big year in terms of just electoral, not just in the state of Connecticut, but across the country.
Yeah.
And I think that they need some meat for those folks. And I don't think Majority Rojas or Duff really want to step off the stage yet. And they want to keep pushing it as much as they can to show that they're trying to do something.
All right. State Rep. Tony Scott, Republican, District 112, the General Assembly, Monroe, Easton, Trumbull. He's also the ranking member on the Housing Committee. Tony, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Anything you hear on this, be sure to give us a call, okay?
Will do. Thanks, Paul, for the time.
Appreciate it. State Rep. Tony Scott, if you're in Monroe, Easton, and Trumbull, you may know Tony, Republican, District 112. So is the Democratic majority in Hartford, are they just playing games? Are they the Democrats that run the House and the Senate, are they not serious people? Are they not acting serious in a time where we should be really serious about certain things? And I'm talking about this supposed housing bill. I don't know whether we have one or we don't have one. But the people who control the General Assembly, the leaders in the state Senate and the leaders in the state House, I'm telling you folks, if you go by what's on social media, and why not? You put something out there, then I have the right to look at it and assume you're serious, do I not? If we go by some of the stuff coming out of the leadership in Hartford, I'm sitting back, you know, last night, kind of looking over what happened yesterday and looking ahead to today, and I'm saying to myself, is this a freaking game, or what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Are we serious people in Connecticut? Apparently with a lot of stuff we're not. We could talk about Pura all day, but that's a whole nother thing. We could talk about ridiculously wanting to invest in a women's pro basketball team, but that's another thing. So why do I start with this? So backtrack a couple of days. Nobody seems to know what's going on with this housing bill. And the reason I'm focusing on this and letting you know every step and nook and cranny about this bill is this piece of legislation and the determination of the Democratic Party in Hartford to jam this down our throats could, for a lot of you, affect the property value of your home and or piece of property. Your home, whether it's a condo, whether it's an A-frame, whether it's a traditional home, whether it's a townhouse or whatever, or a multi-unit building, part of the value of that home is assigned to A, where it is, what city or town and what municipality, and B, where it is inside of that city or town, that municipality. How close is the nearest property? What is the zoning? So in an effort to curry favor and talk to voters coming up next year, the Democratic majorities, they're just itching to do something here to make them look like the vanquishing kings. When it comes to this now, I'm not saying that housing legislation isn't necessary. Again, this is one of these things that should be and is figured out on a far higher plane of compensation and pay than you'd ever want to get me involved with. All right? I'm a dummy when it comes to these things as far as housing and zoning about that. But I don't think I'm a dummy when it comes to me seeing here that the process is not open, right? And there's a bit of trolling going on in the process here. So why do I bring this up today? Now, we have heard for weeks that there's been no real progress on this bill. The governor says he's still waiting. Nobody's saying a word. And I'm like, well, okay. And now they're saying, well, maybe the housing bill, which again could affect the property value that your home sits on or the value of your home. It's a very important thing. Maybe this bill will just be put off, put in timeout, go to the corner, timeout time, go to timeout until after the elections in 2026. Because we're supposedly not hearing anything, right? So somebody sends me a link last night, and I see it's a link to a Twitter posting. It's not Twitter anymore. It's X. And I see that, and I look, and I always kind of try and check here, is this real? And this appears to be real. And this is from a person who's been on this radio station, not on this program, but I know Melissa's had him on, I think, a few times. He wasn't real happy with me and took it out on Melissa once, but that's another story. Thank you very much. Jason Rojas of East Hartford, the House Majority Leader, very powerful position in Hartford. So apparently he puts this on X last night. Again, this is from Jason Rojas, a very powerful man in the Democratic leadership. Quote, interesting to read a news story with quotes from colleagues questioning whether a housing bill exists while sitting by the Connecticut River reading a housing bill that's informed by stakeholders who've actually proposed ideas to improve housing access, affordability, and security. So Jason Rojas, now he has the freedom of speech to do this. He is saying, no, there is a housing bill yet. When I talk to reporters on this program, when I talk to people who work in the General Assembly, even when you hear from other legislators, what do we hear? Well, we don't think there's a housing bill yet. Hello. We have a member of the General Assembly saying, no, I'm reading a housing bill right now. So one of two things is happening. He's either trolling everybody or the Democratic leadership is, there's a shock, lying again. Which is it? Again, let me read exactly what Speaker Rojas put here. Here's the quote. I'm not leaving anything out here. Here's the exact quote from Speaker Rojas. Quote, Majority Leader. Interesting to read a news story with quotes from colleagues questioning whether a housing bill exists while sitting by the Connecticut River reading a housing bill that's informed by stakeholders who have actually proposed ideas to improve housing access, affordability, and security. Now, assuming this is not a spoof account, and just about everybody who sent this to me and read it said, no, it looks real and legitimate. So he's saying that there is a housing bill, and a lot of other people are saying, I guess, including the governor's office, saying, well, there's no housing bill. Who's zooming here? Who's zooming who here? What is this, a game? You're in the middle, leadership here is in the middle of trying to put together a bill that excuse my language here, that may F with the property values of people's homes. Well, you shouldn't say that, Paul. I didn't say anything. I used a single consonant. Figure it out. So does it exist or not? Or should I not ask that? Is this whole thing a joke, which I'm starting to think it is? Is the Democratic majority in Hartford so hell-bent on doing something that they're not even going to be honest as to whether or not there's a bill? Is there a framework of a bill? The governor's office isn't saying anything. I didn't hear anything from Martin Looney. I didn't hear anything from Bob Duff. I didn't hear anything from Matt Ritter. But again, I'm seeing this from Jason Rojas. Now, the state Republicans have answered this. We'll give you that momentarily. But here's my question of the day, and we start with this. Should state lawmakers pass a housing bill in a planned special session or just wait until after the 2026 election? What is the rush on this? Oh, I think I know what the rush is. Maybe people will elect other people who are not for this. What a joke. What an abject joke we are. I am warning you people, the underhanded, slimy underbelly of lawmaking here in Connecticut is rearing its head again. We're starting to get, you know, little clues here. What I'm talking about, there was a post on X yesterday. You can find it. Actually, if you go to the Connecticut State Senate Republican account on X or to Jason Rojas's account, there is confusion here now as to whether or not there is a housing bill out there. And again, this is the bill where majority Democrats want to, in some way, shape, or form, Bigfoot or take over some local housing mandates that your city or town generally handles. And make no mistake, there's a bullseye on Fairfield County here. I know it's supposedly for the entire state. I get it. But the crosshairs are squarely on Fairfield County here. There is a large contingent of people in Hartford who don't like the makeup of Fairfield County, the racial makeup, the price of the homes, the size of the homes, the size of the lots, what's allowed in town and what isn't. And they can talk about, well, Connecticut this, Connecticut that. Yeah, I get it. I understand it. Maybe some areas outside of Hartford, Farmington, Avon, West Simsbury, West Hartford, maybe some spots on the shoreline. But there is this lingering anger at Fairfield County. It's been there for years. It goes back 40 years to when I started to do news. So the governor has not said a word as to whether or not there's a bill, right? Have you heard us talk about it? I don't know whether he touched on it with Melissa the other morning. I'm not. But nothing is coming out of the governor's office. Nothing is coming out of the state Republicans' office because the GOP has been shut out of the process. So here is an ex post here by one of the leading Democrats in the state, the House Majority Leader, Jason Rojas, East Hartford. He says, quote, interesting to read a news story from quotes from colleagues questioning whether a housing bill exists while sitting by the Connecticut River reading a housing bill that's informed by stakeholders who've actually proposed ideas to improve housing access, affordability, and security. Well, wait a minute, Representative Rojas, with all due respect, are you sharing that bill? with anybody here? Or is this going to be, and I hope I'm wrong here, prove me wrong, is this going to be more behind closed doors lawmaking? Because your party has the numbers in Hartford, and they are going to say, screw everybody else. I mean, I'm just reading what he put here. Interesting to read a news story with quotes from colleagues questioning whether a housing bill exists. Well, does a bill exist? The governor's office isn't saying anything. Your leadership isn't saying anything, but yet you are sitting there, hoping you had a nice day, looks very nice, nice picture out there, reading a housing bill. By the way, the photo of the bill here has, I think, the bill number blocked out. Now, unless this is a big troll by him, I don't know. Now, the state Senate Republicans have required, there's a new version of the Connecticut Democrats' bill to take away local control of housing and zoning discussions. But while House Majority Leader Jason Rojas was busy reading it by the river tonight, Republican legislators and the public are cut out of the process once again. And the GOP caucus is right. Again, this post looks legitimate. If it's not, it's not. And we're all fooled. I don't think so. There's no rush to do this bill. There's no rush. This whole affordable housing thing, the way it's presented, is a sham. You've got to understand that. A lot of people think this is low-income housing or reduced-income housing. It's not. It still allows developers to build, to market, and to sell really expensive housing. As long as they set aside a certain number of units, and there are incentives for them to do it as to affordable prices. What's affordable? Look up what the formula is here. You think an affordable unit in Greenwich is going to be affordable to a lot of people in the state? No, this is all a sham. And if you're angry at me, if you're on the Democratic side and you're angry at me saying it isn't a sham, show us the bill. Where's the bill? Or if you really want a bill to pass and you're in the Democratic leadership, hold a news conference, say, hey, we're implementing these aspects that the Republicans suggested. But you're not going to, because this is nothing more than a legislative trick. This is a three-ring circus that you want to jam something in before the election next year. A couple of days ago, we had a poll from the University of New Hampshire looking at Governor Ned Lamont, his favorability, whether or not he should run again. And to break down some of those numbers, we go to one of our go-to people, Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University poli-sci professor, scholar in residence, talking about the numbers. Gary, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Doing well, Paul. Good to hear from you.
Great that you can set aside the time for us, Gary. We always appreciate it. All right, the governor's approval number, not really surprising, Gary. What, 54% out of about 800 people surveyed, which is a pretty good sample size for the state. Any thoughts on that? I wasn't really surprised with that, were you?
I was not surprised, no, because we've known all along that he's a pretty popular governor. He's one of the most popular. He's in the top 10 in the country in terms of his popularity. And so when I saw that poll, I was not too surprised. He, generally speaking, is a pretty popular individual. They like what he's doing on the economy. They like what he's doing on some other issues, too. And generally speaking, people like, you know, Governor Lamont. They don't have major, you know, issues with him. I know that you're going to hear more about that as the campaign gets closer. And I know that some of the Republicans have already been identifying what they consider to be shortcomings. But Nevertheless, the people in Connecticut are pretty satisfied and content with this governor.
You know, Gary, one thing I think that helps him, and I think you may agree with me because you and I have been watching this stuff for a long time. Here, the thing with Ned Lamont is let me just bottom line it here. He doesn't come over as a jerk. You know what I mean? He comes over as a guy, and you know how powerful this could be for a politician. He comes over as a guy, despite his incredible wealth, that could be the guy next door that you're out mowing the lawn with one night and you stop to just talk. No, seriously, he's like that picket fence guy. Hey, Ned, what's up? How are the kids? You know what I mean?
Yes, and I do know what you mean, and certainly very unlike his predecessor in that respect.
just a bit, huh?
A little bit, right. I know. He's not snarky. He's not arrogant. And you're right, he is so incredibly wealthy, but yet he comes across in many ways as a populist. And so, you know, that too is part of those approval ratings, is that people, you know, when you like someone and you don't dislike them as a person, you generally feel that, you know, the person's a good guy and keep them around. And so, Ned Lamont is a very likable governor, and I've interacted with him on more than one occasion.
Yeah.
And just what you described is totally accurate.
The second number there, Gary, I wonder if that gives a little pause to Democrats or raises eyebrows a little to Republicans. I guess when people were asked, do you want him to run again? He's only getting 43%. And I don't know about you, I saw that and I said, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, you're right on that. And that's because in Connecticut, we normally frown upon, you know, third-term governors. I mean, we did have one in John Rowland, and we know what happened there.
Oops.
That didn't end very well.
Yeah.
And you know, there's been a long tradition in this state of ours that two is enough.
Yeah.
And so even though you might like someone, like we do with Ned Lamont, nevertheless, you know, Connecticut is the Constitution state, and a Constitution state tends to favor a limited government to some extent, of course. And so even though we have Democratic control in this state, we still have some reservations about people wanting to have too much power. And so that's why that poll number went down. And I saw that as well. Yeah.
So now, Gary, if you're the Republicans, you look at that. Now, Jen Tooker dropped out of the campaign. She was declared the first select person of Westport. She's out. Aaron Stewart still is not officially in, and Ryan Fazio is officially in. He's on the way to probably getting the money he needs with his connections to get that Citizens Election Fund money. So if you're the Republicans, Gary, do you think that 43% kind of tepid number, does that give the GOP any hope here or not?
Yeah, well, I think it does. Yeah. Even though he's a popular governor, you know, we see that there's less than a majority of people who don't think he should run again. And so that seems to suggest to, I would say, to the Republicans that you mentioned, that people are looking maybe for a change. Even though they like the governor, nevertheless, change is in the atmosphere and in the air. And so I'd say that would probably embolden both Stewart and Fazio, like you're suggesting.
Dr. Gary Rose, the guest for a few more minutes, Sacred Heart University poli-sci professor and scholar in residence. Gary, one other question that they polled in that, and I don't know what he's trying to do here. And look, we love our women's basketball, but the notion of him, and I understand maybe he figures, well, I'll say we tried, maybe that's it, but I don't know whether this is to avoid another scar from the Hartford Whalers like we had 30-something years ago. But this notion of investing state pension money, only 15% of that poll, Gary, thought it was a good idea. I mean, that's I don't know. I think he's just trying to look concerned here.
Well, I'll tell you, if he decides to run on that, and he does run again, then I would say that he's not going to be a third term governor.
Really?
Because that issue is that's not going to fly. People do not want to use pension money, and they don't want to use state money to support a basketball team like that.
Yeah.
The women's basketball team. They like the fact that Mohegan Sun is running that show.
Yeah.
And so if Lamont hitches his wagon to that and tries to bring it to Hartford, I think that's a losing cause on his part.
And not to mention, Gary, I mentioned this with somebody the other day, we have constitutionally in this state, our investments are not done by a board or an advisory board like of other state treasurers do it. I mean, Eric Russell, who's in the seat now, or any other state treasurer, it goes back decades. That state treasurer here, I believe, has the final say.
Yeah, yes, I know. And I don't know why the governor is speaking about this. I mean, maybe he does like basketball, and I guess he likes, you know, the Sun. I suppose he does. Maybe he goes to the games. I don't know. But to me, yeah, I think that issue is one that's probably going to fade pretty quickly when he realizes that it doesn't have any traction.
Yeah, Gary, finally, let me just pick your brain a little bit on what's going on nationally. You have now, you and I both know, I've always said, Gary, these government shutdowns, in a lot of respects, are kind of kabuki theater. We know what happens here, especially heading into a midterm. But it certainly looks like the Trump White House is trying to play this a little more seriously here now, talking about thousands of layoffs. They already went home for the week. This, I think, Gary, despite this happening more often than people want, I think this could spiral out of control. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think in some respects, it's a continuation of what we were observing with Elon Musk and Doge,
Yeah. You
know, the deep cuts. And no, the Republicans really do have a very strong agenda, and I don't see them budging on this issue.
Yeah.
And they are more than willing for these people to go home and perhaps not come back to their jobs.
Mm.
So this is a serious matter. It really is. Even though we're talking non-essential services, nevertheless, there's going to be a lot of people, I think, that are soon going to be out of work if this, because the Republicans are not willing to compromise on this.
Yeah, and final thought here, Gary, I don't like, personally, this is just me, I don't like when the term, pardon me, non-essential government worker is used because they still have bills to pay, and they have to rent payments to make and car payments to make. And, you know, I said yesterday to people, I said, be careful saying, oh, they'll be fine. No, if they miss, and obviously there's a little bit of a delay in whether you miss a check, but, you know, they're already going to miss at least one check here. And that's something I think both sides should really take into account here.
Oh, there's going to be some pain as a result of this. Absolutely. Unless there is a major compromise, there's going to be a lot of people, I think, that are going to feel it, and they're going to be hurting. And this is real. This is not just theater. It really isn't.
Yeah.
And So I do believe that it's going to be it's going to continue for some time.
Gary, always great to have you on. Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence there. Gary, good to chat with you. We'll keep an eye on all this. We'll talk in a few weeks. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Paul. Take care.
Appreciate it. Our buddy, Dr. Gary Rose, political science professor and scholar in residence at Sacred Heart University. Go Pios. There you go. Look, no surprise that at the core of this partial government shutdown that's going on now that could trickle back down to Connecticut and cause lawmakers in Hartford to dip into some of our $6.2 billion surplus here in the rainy day fund. A lot of this has to do with money. No surprise there. And some sorts of subsidies, some tax money and everything. So to lay this all out, we welcome back a past guest to this program, Damian Brady. He is the VP of Research at the National Taxpayers Union. And he discusses what the deal is here and maybe explains a little bit as to what's going on here. Hey, Damian, it's Paul here in Bridgeport once again. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Paul. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm good, Damian, but I'm trying to figure this out, like a lot of Americans here, what to do and how to view this government shutdown here. One side says the other side is lying. That side says, no, you're lying. It has to do with health care and subsidies connected to Obamacare. So lay this out for us, Damian, and for my listeners here. What is causing this whole thing?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. This is a process that only happens here in Congress.
Yeah.
At the heart of it, there's a law saying that no money can be spent unless Congress approves it. So so they have to pass appropriations every year, and the process has really broken down. So now we're in the midst of our 21st government shutdown due to a lapse in funding by the failure of Congress to come to an agreement. It's completely ridiculous. There is an easy solution that we can talk about later,
sure.
But in the meantime, the Republicans in the House have passed a what's called a continuing resolution that would just continue funding, I think, until around Thanksgiving, sometime in November.
Yeah.
And that would give lawmakers time to approve a total spending package for fiscal year 2026, which started on October 1st. So, you know, we're past the deadline for that. That's why we're in the shutdown. Democrats in the Senate are refusing to approve that. They think this is a great opportunity to hold the government up, shut down taxpayer-funded services and operations, and poorly treat federal employees who are either furloughed or forced to work but can't get paid to do essential work. And they want to continue some Obamacare subsidies that were increased temporarily by President Biden first through his American Rescue Plan Act. And it was provided on a short-term basis. The point at the time they argued was that, you know, we're in this pandemic, and we really should try to do things to help people get health insurance.
Yeah.
So we'll plus it up, make it more generous, and expand it to more people well above the poverty line. That was extended again in the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, and they're supposed to expire at the end of this year, and then it would go back to what it was, what the Democrats had passed in the Obamacare law. So they're holding everything up because they think those ought to be extended, and they have some other proposals as well. But so it would be about $40 billion a year to make those tax subsidies permanent that they want to put in place, and then they have other demands as well, which could run up to $90 to $100 billion a year in new spending on taxpayers' tab.
So, Damian, this, so people understand, these subsidies, these Obamacare subsidies and the increases that were okay during the Biden years, like, they could have signed a continuing resolution, what I guess they call a clean CR, and then had further debate on that. Am I reading that right? There's no reason that they have to do those Obamacare subsidies now or not. Do they have to act on those or not?
Well, you know, first of all, the Democrats had the trifecta under President Biden. They could have made them permanent, but they're super expensive. So then they just passed them on a short-term basis. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, they're supposed to expire and go back to what they were. You know, from the Democrats' point, they're arguing that the Republicans probably won't negotiate with them and give them the whole thing that they want and making these tax subsidies permanent. And I call them a tax subsidy because, you know, it's a tax credit, but most of its effect goes to people who well above and beyond any income tax obligation that they owe. So they end up getting a net check from the federal government to buy health insurance in the Obamacare exchanges in each state. So it's a huge, huge subsidy that other taxpayers are being forced to pay the bill for if they do make it permanent.
Now, you guys at the National Taxpayers Union, and Damian Brady is the guest, VP for Research, you talk about rogue health insurance brokers here and the role of these brokers. I have not heard that mentioned once in all the media coverage of this, Damian. Explain that a bit. Go into that.
Yeah, there are some issues because it's a very complicated tax credit subsidy. And the way it works is you tell the IRS how much money you think you're going to make that year, and you get an advance payment from the IRS for that amount. So, you know, it's an incentive for a lot of people to go, or for certain companies and bad actors to go out and tell people, hey, you need to sign up for this, you know, and then when those filers come around to tax day next April, they're supposed to reconcile what they got from their IRS versus what their actual income was. So there's a lot of improper payments through this program because of the way that it's made advanceable. So that's another big red flag about this. You know, first of all, it's just supposed to be a temporary increase in the program. And then there's all these complicated rules about getting it and then trying to make sure that taxpayers aren't subject to overpayments under the way that it has been expanded. It's not fair to taxpayers.
And you folks, Damian, finally here, you point out, Damian Brady, an ironic twist here. I guess what? You folks were supposed to hold a workshop here to help some members of Congress do basic budgeting work here. What was that about?
Yeah, that's right. We have we've been planning this an event on the Hill, inviting Hill staffers to talk about paths towards fiscal discipline and getting a congressional fiscal budget back in order. But because of the shutdown, you know, that had to be postponed, you know, but it's still something that needs to happen, you know. And I mentioned a possible reform bill earlier. Senator Lankford in the Senate and Jody Arrington in the House have this bill called the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act. So in the event that Congress can't agree on funding levels for the next fiscal year, this law provides for continuing rolling short-term spending bills at the previous level, and it requires members of Congress to come to D.C. They can't spend any money to leave town, and they make them hammer it out and come to a deal. So that way, and it's ridiculous that, as I mentioned earlier, the way federal workers get treated through this whole process.
Yeah,
you know, going this lasts a whole month. That's, you know, a lot of people have rent, they have to buy food, and it's just they're being held hostage to, you know, plans to increase deficit spending, and it's completely inappropriate.
Yeah, as I like to say, Damien, I said this earlier in the show and over the past few days, listen, you're all adults, get in a room, order a lot of pizza, and figure it out, right? Come on, this is, but we know why, Damien, because they can raise money off it, right? I mean, this is, look at all the stuff going on right now. This is playing into, sadly, the midterms for next year already.
Yeah, you know, I think it also has to do a lot with gerrymandering, the way states write their draft and draw their congressional districts.
Mm-hmm.
Some districts are just extremely partisan, so, you know, members are just speaking to their particular base, or, you know, are they able to raise money from groups in other areas. And it generates polarized politics. We really ought to be finding solutions here to prevent shutdowns like this from happening again, and, you know, set the government on a path towards fiscal discipline. We have a $37 trillion federal debt. You know, we should be looking for ways to rein in out of control spending, not holding federal employees basically hostage to more deficit spending on top of what we already have.
Exactly. Much thanks. He's been on with us before. Damien Brady, he is the VP of Research at the National Taxpayers Union. And folks, if you want to check them out, very simple website, ntu.org, ntu.org. Damien, thanks. We appreciate the time as always, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Great. Have a great day.
Thanks, Damien. Appreciate that.